Cleaning and Disinfecting in Environmental Services, Part 2, a conversation with Cindy Holmes of West Virginia Project First Line.
Good afternoon and welcome to our series of webinars focused on bringing you information about COVID-19 related topics. The information in these weekly webinars is geared toward long-term care and skilled nursing facilities, but we encourage everyone who's interested to attend. My name is Kathy Caudill. I'm a communications specialist with Quality Insights. Today's webinar is Environmental Cleaning and Disinfection. This is a continuation of our February 7th presentation with West Virginia Project First Line, who will be joining us on the first Wednesday of each month to discuss infection control topics. And now I'd like to introduce our guest today, Cindy Holmes. Cindy is a registered nurse with over 40 years of experience. Her experience includes direct patient care in various settings in acute care hospitals and director of surgical services. Cindy has also worked as a consultant preparing hospitals for regulatory surveys. Her last position in the acute care setting was as director of quality management and infection prevention in a long-term acute care hospital. Cindy is currently the National Health Safety Network epidemiologist for the West Virginia Department of Health, Bureau of Public Health, Office of Epidemiology and Prevention Services. She is responsible for the analysis of infection control assessment data, as well as data from the National Healthcare Safety Network for West Virginia from a variety of healthcare facilities, including hospitals and long-term care facilities. Cindy, welcome back.
Thank you. So, good afternoon, everybody. Like Kathy said, last month we started the EVS series and we showed a Project First Line session on environmental cleaning and disinfection. It included a brief video from Dr. Abby Carlson, who is with the CDC, and she explained the difference between cleaning and disinfecting. So just a quick review. Cleaning removes visible dirt, dust, spills, smears, and grime, including organic material like blood, as well as some germs from surfaces. Disinfection is a process that kills the germs. So it's important to clean before disinfecting because dirt and grime can make disinfectants not work well, and we need the disinfectants to work to kill the germs on surfaces or objects. We also reviewed why cleaning and disinfecting matters. So with this series, there's two additional videos from Dr. Carlson. Each of them are about 6 minutes. The one I'm going to show you today is entitled, Why Does Contact Time Matter? And again, it's from Dr. Carlson at the CDC, and it's only about 6 minutes.
Welcome back, everyone, to our video blog here at CDC's Project First Line, Inside Infection Control. I'm Abby Carlson. I'm an infectious diseases doctor at the CDC, and it's great to have you back with us today. We have talked in earlier episodes about cleaning and disinfection, what each of those do and why they're so important in healthcare. You'll remember that cleaning removes dirt and gunk and some germs that are on surfaces, and disinfection comes after cleaning and kills those germs. Today we're going to focus on disinfection and specifically about something called contact time, what it is and why it's so important. Contact time, and you're also going to hear this called dwell time or wet time, it's the amount of time that a disinfectant needs to sit on a surface before being wiped away or otherwise disturbed in order for it to do its job. And its job, as we know, is to kill the germs. There are a lot of germs in healthcare, that's no surprise to any of us, and quite obviously we don't want them to spread around to our patients or to others. When we disinfect surfaces like bed rails and door handles, or when we disinfect equipment like stethoscopes and other devices, all of that is a huge part of infection control. And that's why it's important to disinfect correctly. Now, in the United States, we rely on the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, to review the chemicals that are used in the workplace to make sure that they're safe. Disinfectants used in healthcare should be registered with the EPA, and the label usually says something like hospital grade, which identifies that product as being one that can be used in the healthcare setting. We've put a link below to one of the EPA's specific lists, List N for November, which is the list of disinfectants that are effective against SARS-CoV-2, our virus that causes COVID-19. Now, when you're using a disinfectant, it's incredibly important to follow the instructions on the label. And there are a lot of reasons to do that. You have to know what the chemical can be used on, which surfaces it could be used on before you use it. You have to know which germs it's been proven to kill so that you're using it in the right place at the right time. And you need to know if it needs to be diluted, which means adding water to it to take the concentration down to a safe concentration and a correct concentration for killing germs. It's a little bit like cooking. You want to use the right ingredients and follow the recipe. But one of the most important reasons for following the label instructions is to know the contact time. The product that you're using might not kill germs right away. It actually takes time for germs to react with the chemical in the product and get that killing effect on the germs before we can say that something is truly disinfected. Depending on the product, the germ that you're targeting, this time can vary, but it's always specific and it should be on that label. If you're using a product that both cleans and disinfects, it's still going to have a contact time that you need to know. It's also important when you're doing this not to rush things. Don't wipe the surface with another cloth before it's dry, hoping to dry it off more quickly. Definitely don't blow on it with your breath or try to dry it off with your breath, because you have germs in your breath, unfortunately, that will make it dirty again. And don't blow air on it in another way, like with a fan, unless the maker of the product says it's okay to do that. Sometimes you might be in a really dry environment, and actually the product might dry too fast before the contact time has finished. There should be instructions on what to do if that happens that the manufacturer gives you. But in general, most of the time you have to reapply the product. You have to put it down again on the surface and add another layer to meet that full contact time to get the killing effect. You have to wait for the entire contact time to finish before anything can be used again, whatever it's used for, or before a new patient comes into a room after a last patient was discharged. We know that this can be really tough. We're trying to get people in and out of our rooms and out of place as soon as possible. And we know that patients are waiting for rooms and waiting for equipment, and there could be a lot of pressure because of all of that to move fast. But the risk of spreading germs when you push room turnover or equipment turnover is just too big. That's why it's so important to make sure your disinfection is complete before you move on to the next patient. If you're the person doing the disinfection, you want to do it correctly to keep patients safe. If you're a supervisor or another leader, your plans for room turnover or equipment turnover should take into account the time that these products need to work. And it's important not to rush people to use the product incorrectly just to meet a deadline or a timeline. You have to set the process up to succeed and to allow your staff to use the products correctly. If turnover time is a concern, rather than using a product incorrectly, choose another one, one that works best for the timeline that you need. So, to sum it all up, when you're aware of contact time, you can be sure that you're killing the germs the way you're supposed to and keeping them from spreading to other patients and other colleagues and other people in your environment. All right, thanks everybody for joining us again. As always, please follow up with us on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, and on the web, cdc.gov/projectfirstline. We will see you back here for the next episode.
The next thing that I would like to share with you, how to read a disinfectant label. So, and this one page little handout is also available on Project First Line, and you can go in, download it, print it, laminate it, put it up for your staff, whatever, but it is available. So this just goes through everything that's on the label. We're going to start up here at the top. Active ingredients, that's kind of self-explanatory. What are the main chemicals? There will be an EPA registration number. that you can look up if you need to. Then the directions are going to tell you where it should be used. For example, this says for disinfection of healthcare organisms. It actually gives you the actual organisms that it kills. What kind of surfaces can be disinfected? This example is hard, non-porous surfaces. It must be pre-washed. Pre-wash the surface and mop or wipe with the solution. And it must stay on the surface for at least 10 minutes. So there's your contact time, 10 minutes. Then rinse well and air dry. And then let's see, back up here to the top, it's going to give your precautionary warnings. How dangerous is it? This particular example says it's hazardous to humans and domestic animals. Wear gloves and eye protection. What it may cause, eye irritation, etc. Then it gives you some first aid instructions, poison control, storage and disposal. It tells you that it should be stored in a cool, dry area away from direct sunlight and heat. Keep it cap on it and the lid closed, and do not reuse or refill this container. Now, if it needed diluted, that would be on this label also. So this can be very helpful, especially to your EVS staff, especially to new EVS staff, on how to read your labels. The other thing is, all of Project First Line's videos, modules, and anything are really good resources for either refreshing your staff or even orienting new staff. And also, particularly for EBS, there is a CDC program. So there's actually two parts to this. This one is really good. I'm not going to run through the whole thing because I don't think we have time, but it's basic, but yet what I like about it is it stresses the importance of your EBS staff and what they do. So let me just go through a few screens here. And it's self-paced.
Welcome to Memorial Hospital. I'm Sophia, a senior environmental services or EVS worker, and this is where I work. Would you like a tour of the hospital, or would you like to learn more about what EVS workers do? Great. I've been an EVS worker for many years and would love to tell you about it. Do you know who the most important workers are in a hospital? You would think the answer would be just doctors and nurses, but the answer is everyone. All healthcare workers, including EVS workers, work together to help create a safe environment that promotes patient healing and recovery. Our job is infection prevention and control, or IPC. Our EVS team is the first line of defense against germs in the hospital. That's especially important as some of those germs are resistant to antibiotics. Isn't that right, Ryan?
Yep. Without us, everyone in the hospital would be at risk of getting an infection. Poor environmental cleaning and disinfection practices can lead to germs spreading and causing healthcare-associated infections, or HAIs. Take a look at this patient room. Can you see what needs to be cleaned? The visible things to clean are the trash can, the counter, the floor by the chair, and the spilled drink. However, what you see is only part of the problem. Take a look at the places where you may not see germs.
By only cleaning what you see, a contaminated surface might be overlooked, leaving a high risk of germs being transferred to someone else. Infection prevention is more than memorizing what to clean. I think about why I need to clean and scan the surrounding environment for infection risks. This helps me recognize potential problems and intervene to protect patients and my coworkers. There are times when our job is a challenge, but what we do makes a difference for everyone. That's why we enjoy our job.
Okay, I just wanted to give you a little brief viewing of that. Like I said, that has three scenes. It talks about, what that scene talks about. Then the, I think it's scene three, talks about how they actually, you know, clean a room, top to bottom, clean to dirty. I think it's a really well put together training, like I said, especially for new EBS staff and refresher for everyone. So that is about all I have for today. I hope you all found this information helpful. And I encourage you to check out all the resources on Project First Line and CDC. And Liz, my partner here at the West Virginia Project First Line, we're committed to help provide infection control education for all frontline healthcare workers so that they can protect their patients, their coworkers, and themselves from infectious disease threats in healthcare. So the training options that we offer, we can do a train the trainer so that then you can train your staff at your own leisure on your own time frame. We can do in-person Project First Line sessions, and we could also do virtual Project First Line sessions. So like I said, if there's any questions, but please feel free to contact myself or Liz with any questions or if we can be of any assistance.
Cindy, was there anything you wanted to add before we get ready to close?
No, I don't think so. Again, anything that myself or Liz can help you all with, we'd be more than happy to. I think that during COVID, I mean, we always knew that our EBS people were very, very important. I think it really came to the forefront during COVID that, you know, these are very important workers in our facilities, and we need to give them all the resources and education that they need to do their job correctly to protect our patients and themselves and their families.
Cindy, I'd like to thank you for joining us again this week, and I'd like to thank all of you for joining us, and we hope to see you back here again soon.
Thank you.
If you would like to contact Cindy Holmes, you can email her at cynthia.a.holmes@wv.gov. That's cynthia.a.holmes@wv.gov. You can check out our other interviews at qualityinsights.org/QIN/multimedia.